On this week's episode of Marketing O'Clock,
we cover more PMax features to help steer your campaigns to success.
It was utterly fantastic.
Thank you. Nicole.
The March core update has concluded, and honestly, I could have said that last week.
Google Ads will begin subtracting low-volume keywords in just a month.
All on today's show.
Welcome, you are listening to Marketing O'Clock. Just stay tuned. Digital marketing news, but let's get specific. Digital ads, SEO and analytics, social media and more. Pretty much everything that'll make your website perform. With new shows every Friday. We give you the news with sass and puns and definitely hot takes. Thank you for tuning in. You know what time it is. It's officially Marketing O'Clock. Settle in, sit back, keep it locked.
Hey there, I'm Christine Zernheld,
aka Shop.
I'm Nicole Waddington.
And I'm Greg Finn.
And it's officially Marketing O'Clock.
Here on May 3rd, 2024. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us again. I hope you're watching on YouTube this week, youtube.marketingclock.com, because Greg has arrived in full glam today. So who's your makeup artist?
Before we get into the digital marketing news of the week, you might be able to tell that there is something wrong with my eye. I don't know, Taves, if you can get in on here, but
smoky
eye.
I've got a
black eye. And I was playing a game that my son made up. It's basically like floor soccer. He calls it rum ball. I don't know why he calls it. He's very good at this game, though. And I guess he plays it at school and stuff and beats everybody. So I go really aggressive on it. It's like floor hockey, but it's with a ball and you hit it with your hand. So it's like your hand is a hockey stick. And we didn't have a huge area. And the way to do it was like to kind of like deke back and forth and then you smack it. And I was doing like a big deke one way, trying to like get him off balance and then make this shot. And he tried to twist and turn around and he kicked me directly in my eye socket. My glasses, like it probably would have gone in my eye. I had my glasses on, thankfully. It knocked the glasses up and off and over the goal. And I just like screamed and I like went down to the ground. And like, I'm like, oh my gosh, this might be bad. Like full force kick. He doesn't weigh a ton, but a full force kick to the eye socket. And then I'm like, just like, hey, I'm good, man. I'm good, buddy. Like everything's fine. Everything's fine. And I'm like, look up and I can still see and everything's good. And then I'm like, fine. I'm like, fine. I'm like, it was an accident, buddy. It's fine. And then the thing that incensed me is he goes, Dad, that really hurt my toe. I'm like, yeah, it hurt your toe? Your toe went into my cornea. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, man.
But no, it was all good. And then it happened and it like instantly swole up and started drooping down. So I messaged our channel. And I'm like, hey, if my eye is like totally swollen over, I'm probably not going to go on the show. And I immediately put like ice on it. And of course, I just get trolled by Shep.
No, you
Shep's
didn't.
Like, oh, you need a sick day.
I was just like, let me know if you need a sick day.
Yeah, of course. You know, you knew what you were doing. And so then, of course, like right after it, I iced it up. I still went out, pitched 100 pitches. We did some BP. Then I played basketball for
That's
a half
amazing.
Hour. Yep.
You should be really proud.
Thank you.
Nobody would take sick day as offensive as you do. I'm really glad I found this pain point. Nobody else would care that I said they had a sick day. It happens.
Yes. So I've added that to my litigation against you for the record.
And you
made
it.
That's been handled by the Barnes Brothers.
Okay.
Has Selena been in contact with you yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Coming
I'll let
soon.
You know.
First up in the news, there are many webmasters out there that would like to have some litigation against Google because not only is the March core update finally done, it was 45 days long.
Wow.
They announced it on the 26th of April and it actually ended on the 19th of April. So they announced the end of the fact that it was done rolling out and it actually was done rolling out a week ago. And some people are up in arms. I mean, to me, I remember the days where there's no communication. So like any communication from Google is like good in my book. But there were a lot of people that were like pretty upset about it. And I get it. Like if you're going to go and say we're going to help you know when some of these updates are going to happen, like how do you go a week without letting people know mm-hmm. that the update is concluded? Because that's the whole point of having that, you know, communications team, is to be able to, you know, be part of the community. So Glenn Gabe said, some thoughts about the completion of the March core update. How in the world could Google not explain it ended a week ago? Seriously, did somebody fall asleep at the wheel? Maybe they didn't replace the two people I shared a few weeks ago that were monitoring it for them. See the GIF below. He's got a picture of some skeletons. Now, another note is they came out with the original tweet and linked to feedback. So if you have feedback about the March 2024 core update, there is a form that you can fill out. You can put in all your information and they might look at it. Maybe they'll look at it. I mean, maybe the communications team is asleep at the wheel or dead like Glenn thinks. Who knows? But you can do that. And then one note on that, there's only an option for one URL. And so there's somebody named Devoclanes on X, and they said the form provides you with an option for one URL. Whereas in our case, there are thousands of URLs with the same issue. After the update, not a single one of our original URLs holds the top spot, and we are being surpassed by large networks with our own content. So it seems like somebody's scraping them and jumping up to the top, and they can only submit one URL, to which John Mueller said, just submit your best example. So if you have an issue, if you think you were hit unfairly, go fill out this form. Apparently not a lot of people are filling this form out. I understand. The update ended on the 18th, but you didn't tell us till the 26th. So, like, I see why people haven't filled it out yet. So, another note, typically with core updates, you see some sort of, like, reversion to the mean for a lot of sites that actually work on what might have hit them in a previous update. The September helpful content update hit a lot of people with content issues. Many people changed their ways, invested in content, tried to build things that people wanted to read. None of these sites appeared to have had any type of rebound from this, which is not good. There's going to be more about that in our most remarketing article of the week. And then, and Glenn is all over it, at Glenn Gabe on Twitter or on LinkedIn. And Lily Ray said, another item is almost every single site within the top 100 biggest percentage of losers in this core update is a publisher that makes money off of ads. It is not true of the winner. So she's going to be sharing this data in some upcoming articles. So also follow her at LilyRayNYC on X. And apparently Google said this will result in a 45% reduction in low quality, unoriginal, and unhelpful content in its search results. I've seen it with Penguin and Panda, but it's been a while since there's been this much negative chatter going on.
We've added a segment to the organic lightning round about like checking in on the SERPs, about all the bad results.
Right. And that's not even what you find over on our SEO or look at Search Engine Roundtable. Barry is like one of the only people with comments on. When that ended, I think he had like 300 comments or so, just of people being like, I did all this work, I did everything that I was told to do, and I have not seen anything. If anything, I'm dropping or something like that. Like there's just, it is a bloodbath out there. And his Google image, it was a Google logo covered in blood.
And just as a user, like I felt unhappy lately with what results, you know?
A lot of people are saying that, right? But I, you know what, Chep? Maybe this week is a week they change. Let's cross our fingers here. We'll check back on that.
Okay.
And additionally, one other note, they updated the debugging search traffic drop. So they had a new section for algorithmic updates. If you are interested, if you did take that hit, they added to their debugging search traffic drops section over in their Google Help documentation. What's that noise?
It's time for Barry's Charts with Greg.
And we've got some great charts this week. A lot of action, a lot of activity. And I think it's fun to see, like, the charts saw it stop on the 19th. Well, most of them.
Yeah, I was going to ask if the SEOs had guessed that it ended.
I didn't see a lot of people saying that it had ended, but if you look at the charts, a lot of the charts made sense. Third place is Mangools. And Mangools gets third place simply because of their name. They're always going to be there. I love saying the name Mangools. Second place is Algaroo. This one was interesting because all the charts really picked up on that drop on the 19th, except Algaroo. It actually thought it like jumped up again on the 21st and the 23rd when it ended. So I select the fact that all these charts had showed the fact that things were stable, except El Guru. It's, you know, happened to its own beat over there.
Yeah. Well, that was a big time, you know, TTPD, marketing a clock billboard. People were searching different things.
That's true. True facts.
That could be part of it.
In first place this week, this is chart of the year. Chart of the year, early favorite. SEMrush, first place. If you look at this chart with a keen eye, you will see the Snoopy Rock from Sedona, Arizona. It is a famous rock because it looks like Snoopy's laying down. Some people say Woodstock is on his nose.
Oh, I kind of see it. Okay.
But that chart is the Snoopy Rock in Sedona, Arizona. Hmm. And so that's my favorite chart. And it got the update correct as well. And if you look at the Snoopy's little foot, it kind of gets like a little teeny bit of red, very high.
I just hear rah, 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 rah.
All right. And that was Barry's Charts with Greg, a video segment about audio charts. What did
An
I say?
Audio segment for video
audio
charts.
Segment about visual charts.
All right. We also have some PMAX news. There have been several PMAX updates announced in the last week. And Ginny Marvin at Ads Liaison on X came in clutch with some high-level points to take away from it. So PMAX campaigns now have new customer value mode in beta for purchase conversion goals, and this is also available in SA360. There's also going to be a customer retention goal to win back lapsed clients that's now in beta. Detailed demographics, so age and gender groups are now available in PMAX Audience Insights. I think this is a step in the right direction, getting more insights. Would love to see as many insights as we get on shopping and search campaigns, but we can't hope for too much with PMAX. There will also be budget pacing insights that will show you projected campaign spend and forecasted conversion performance. And then account level IP address exclusion supported by PMAX.
That's cool.
It's also wild that you can be like, oh, I'm going to put this IP exclusion to my entire account. And then PMAX is just like, I've never read this. you know, that's a wild thought. And just one note on this stuff too. Like, I love the fact that we saw Performance Max kind of launch as this subpar product and they're really investing in it. With this stuff, they're sort of like building it as it, like along the way, right? When this thing launched, it sucked. And now we use PMAX in every campaign, roughly, or every account. And then the only thing that still is tricky is the audiences are still absurd to me that you don't have audiences, but you have audience segments. And then when you're looking at the new customer value, like, the match rate of your list is so important. And we have clients that are like on the B2B side and the match rate from what you're logged into on Google versus what you submit when you're making that purchase or making that contact may not be that Gmail address or what they're logged in on for Google. So even if you are looking for something like new customer value, you kind of got to take everything with a grain of salt. And I know we just launched for a client and we break out, here's our branded spend, here's our non-branded spend. And then I think PMAX were just like, meh, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what it's doing? So even if you set this up in the new customer value, no match rate list matches 100%, or no customer match list matches at 100%.
And I love that they roll out new features, but I feel like whenever I try a feature like page feed or something that's limiting the campaign in any way, Google just gets mad and like performance doesn't do as well. I've excluded pages that were getting no traffic just to be safe, like resource pages, and it gets mad at me and stops spending. So I don't know. IP exclusions are at the account level, so I would hope that it wouldn't be as mad about it. But anytime you're doing anything, you just got to be careful. But a lot of these are reporting things too, so they shouldn't be a problem.
And next up, Google Publisher Center will stop allowing you to add publications. This was sort of a wonky tool, but you could go and basically submit your news site as a sort of publisher. And you could also kind of configure based on the feed a little bit. It was a pretty rough tool, to be honest with you. But it was nice that you could say, hey, I would like to apply to potentially show up for Google News. In the past, there was like a way you would manually submit things that changed around 2019. But this will be gone. And Lily Ray NYC says, this really sucks. We saw good results with Google Publisher Center. Not pleased that Google will now be adding sites automatically. Who is eligible? Something tells me small and mid-sized publishers won't be included. Just a hunch. The only person that really loves Google, that loves small business over on Google, is that Google Small Biz Twitter account.
They don't really love them. They just love to talk about them.
That's true.
Use them for engagement.
Yeah. I also submitted something to them, and I'm hoping to be featured by them.
What, submitted something?
Yeah. They asked, what was the number one tip or advice that you've ever had? I said, always treat your paying customers with great respect, support, and customer service.
I really hope they listen.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I feel like whoever runs that Twitter account is like not even in the Google building or anything. No. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Danny also said, to clarify, some people get this. I know others are confused. And basically talked about how Google News has been an issue. And when they had people submit for news, there was an issue because you had to know how to go submit in order to get to news. And then when you couldn't do it, at least Google would try to pull that information. And I like the fact that the end he said, you know, that said, there's always more we can do. It's something I push on, and I'm not alone, especially in cases where sites are not having their content appear in all news queries, but are referenced by others who do. I'd really like to see us improve with this. So, you know, maybe that's coming, but no longer can you just have something and push it into news with, or attempt to push it in news with Publisher Center.
And last piece of main news here. This is something that we talked about back in March when it was announced, but advertisers are starting to get emails about Google Ads automatically pausing, quote, low activity keywords. So I got this email this week. I don't know if it went to all Google Ads people or only people who have keywords in their account that will be infected. But it says you're receiving this message because one or more of your Google Ads accounts may be impacted by an upcoming change to how we handle low activity keywords. Starting in June 2024, we will begin to automatically pause low activity keywords. And something is considered low activity if it was created over 13 months ago and has zero impressions over the past 13 months. And they say they're making the change to help advertisers simplify their accounts and probably drive more PMax impressions. Also, they say that if they pause a keyword, you can always unpause it. But if it doesn't get impressions for 3 additional months, they're going to pause it again. So I don't know if there's even a point. Very frustrating. I wish they weren't in there messing around, but it's something everyone's going to have to deal with. So just be ready for it. I also don't know if it's going to be in change history. I hope it would be. Or I hope we get an email. Like,
yeah. And some people are like upset with this. I really wasn't. Like, if you don't get
really do anything,
an impression in 13 months, like, yeah. What are you that worried about?
I think about it from clients. Like, I have accounts with a ton of keywords in them, and I don't want my client to go in and be like, why aren't we bidding on this? Matters to me.
I agree.
You know
what
I mean?
And then I think the point you made about the PMax is really the big deal, where, you know, you have to have an eligible keyword that is in your account, and PMax won't show for that keyword. So this is another way to have less eligible keywords, but they already do it with low search volume anyway. Like, yeah. They already make it ineligible. So if you don't have an impression in 13 months, I'm assuming you have low search volume anyway, mm-hmm. and it would immediately be ineligible.
Yeah. I guess another concern too is like the slippery slope of what next are they going to take away?
That's true. Like, what if it's not 13 months? What if it's 13 days? Like, I know that sounds aggressive, mm-hmm. but where is that line? Like, if it's 3 months, right? Like, so if you turn something back on, it's cut off in 3 months. If it's something that's a really lucrative term and you want to be number one, you need a high impression share for this, and you have something set up to be manual bidding so that you're at the very top and you have all the impression share in the world, like 3 months seems too short. So yeah, maybe they'll change it and kick it down a little bit, but I do think this leads to more PMax.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Even if they label it like pause due to low activity, pause by Google, I would like that more.
Agree.
Please put it in change history.
Yes. That is a must. Yeah.
Now it's time for this week's take of the week. This is a hashtag fire digital marketing take with extra spice served up for you. We simply deliver the take for your consumption. We give no opinions. We don't influence. You make the call.
All right, this week's take of the week was a quote tweet from the original tweet was from Anthony Higman, where he said, Google Ads will now automatically pause low activity keywords. Wild. And Emily Martin, at Hey Emily Martin on X, said, and quote tweeted this and said, only a matter of time until this says, automatically pausing phrase and exact match keywords.
That's scary.
You know, honestly, like, I could see them saying, like, if you don't have impressions or something like that over a certain number of days, we're going to switch to smart, broad matching or whatever. But yeah, Emily, thanks for giving us a scare.
Yeah, here. Don't give them any ideas, Emily.
Now it's time for this week's ICYMI.
ICYMI, people.
This is something you just might not have seen. Maybe something that you overlooked, but you shouldn't have.
ICYMI, people. Sophie Logan posted an awesome list from her LinkedIn account of all of the marketing events coming up in 2024. So she said, following on from my post on Monday looking for digital marketing events, I took some time and finally got around to updating my personal event tracker. So there are events on here for social media, SEO, PPC, and events all over the world. There's stuff in Europe, the US, and even online. So if you want the full list, head over to linkedin.com/in/Sophie Logan to see her full list. And definitely comment with where you'll be attending this year, because Sophie's asking that info too. Thanks, Sophie.
Now it's time for this week's
pew pew
lightning round. At this point in the show, we split up our content into three parts: paid, organic, and social.
First up in the paid universe this week, Nate Lewis has some more potential drama for us. You may remember he is the one who started all of the outrage over AdStrength, because he had a notification in his account when he was setting up a campaign that said impressions, and it had the triangle with the exclamation point, like they could be limited due to low AdStrength. Now he's finding something similar, but it says low keyword quality.
Which makes sense. That's all we wanted, is some semblance of sense.
But does keyword quality mean quality score?
That
we don't know what that means.
But that doesn't reference a diagnostic tool, which was what everybody was, I was concerned about. I'm not even going to talk about it anymore. Everybody's sick of this.
But I'm worried this is, like, to me, it's referencing quality score. What is keyword quality?
Well, I mean, your quality score impacts your ad rank. Where ad strength shouldn't impact your ad rank, even though there might be not a causative effect, but a correlative effect between your quality score and your
I just want to point out, I felt safe from quality score after last week. Ginny wrote that article, and she said the quality score that is shown in your account is a separate and older diagnostic tool that looks at expected click-through rate, ad relevance, and landing page experience, and it is not used in the auction. I felt like I didn't have to worry about it anymore. She called it old, and now we're talking about keyword quality. I'm just over it.
It's all just PR talk, right? Like, when you saw the DOJ documents, they're like, here's what the perceived click-through rate is. That's really what it is. And these tools dance around the things and aren't actually, like, elements anymore of anything. They're just tools, but in reality, they're trying to tell you if you think somebody's going to click. The issue is, like, I'm not even going to say it. The thing with the acronym AS, okay? Like, that doesn't take into effect anything with conversions. And that's the issue. It's like, you look at all these things and they're like, well, what's the predictive click-through rate right from the DOJ docs? And then that with your bid and your ad rank gets you into the auction. But the problem is, I look at that, and that shouldn't be at all what smart bidding does. Mm-hmm. How does that do anything with the auction when it doesn't matter what your predictive click-through rate is? It matters about your predictive conversion rate, which is the whole thing that just goes right over my head, because you're supposed to be doing smart bidding to get me conversions back, not just to get clicks to make you money. I understand you're going to move the bids up. It might be higher, but I still don't. You look at this stuff and you don't see anything about the conversions, which is the scary part.
And last time they called it a UI test, so I feel like that's what it is. Like, we shouldn't worry about it too much, but I take umbrage with it. Like, give me real facts or don't say anything. Okay, next up, it was New Fronts in New York this week, and Google announced a lot of stuff. First of all, a partnership with companies using its display and video 360 tools, including big names like Disney, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and Paramount Global. They also announced that it is one of the first partners to directly integrate with Disney's real-time ad exchange, or DRAX, which I found out they purposely named after a Marvel villain.
Oh, really? I was going to say that this sounds like a reboot of like Dracula. Mm. You know what I mean?
No, I think it's a bad guy in like Avengers or something. Mm. They also announced Instant Deals, which will enable marketers to establish customized deals with top publishers from within the display and video 360 interface. They said this buying method is already available today for high impact reservation YouTube placements like YouTube Select and Masthead, and soon agencies will be able to access these same placements with non-guaranteed deals for even greater budget flexibility. Plus, Instant Deals are expanding beyond YouTube and major publishers like Disney. And then finally, they also are looking to integrate more AI into the ad creation process, and they have an example of where they're using AI to find audiences through conversational prompts, which I'm kind of interested in.
Yeah, I guess.
Because it's kind of annoying to search for what they used to call custom audiences.
Yeah. I mean, they put a lot in here.
Yeah. So that could be fun to play around with. Next up, there's a new article from The Verge called Meta's Set It and Forget It AI Tool is Misfiring and Blowing Through Cash. And this is talking about Advantage Plus shopping campaigns. So if you're not familiar, these allow you to upload creative, pick a conversion goal, and set a budget cap. And then AI will do the rest. So it's Set It and Forget It is what they're advertising it as. And it's been blowing through daily budgets, apparently, in a couple of hours with CPMs as high as $250 with no sales. And of course, you have to go to Reddit for any kind of support because they laid everyone off from the support team. So they said there's Reddit threads called Advantage Plus Sucks and Is Facebook Broken RN and Is It Just Me? So sad. Someone named RC Williams at VRC Williams made a poll and it says, how is your Meta performance over the last 7 days? 48% said abysmal, 23% said show results, 20% said normal, and 7% said quite good, abysmal. So things are not looking good over there. Next up, Adrian Decker shared something new on LinkedIn. Reddit has announced DSAs for products. He says how it works, the dynamic product ads feature combined shopping signals, machine learning, and advertiser product catalogs, and they can appear as single image or carousel ads, and they can be used for prospecting or remarketing. So look at YouTube for some examples, but this looks cool. Reddit is what you need to be doing right now. Next up, the Tinuiti Digital Ads Benchmark Report is here, and it says that Google Search advertising spend in the U.S. rose by 17% year over year in the first quarter of 2024. Click growth continued to slow, hitting 4% year over year.
And wait, so there were 4% more searches, but 17% more revenue? What? It's almost like it would be a diabolical thought to say, I'm an ad platform, and instead of you setting the bid, I'm going to set the bid, and I'm going to set the bid for your competitors and everybody else out there.
Interesting.
Weird. Weird that the spend rose, but the clicks didn't jump as high.
I have a conspiracy theory about the next part too. CPCs increased 13% year over year, and they were most affected overall by the increase in shopping ad CPCs, both standard and PMAX. Something that not a lot of people are talking about is that eCPC went away for shopping ads, and if you had it turned on, your spends went up because I thought it was going to be like it stopped raising the bids. Like that was what I was most worried about. Like it's not going to raise the bid if they think a conversion is coming. No. The problem was they weren't lowering the bids when they knew a conversion wasn't coming. So we had it turned on for like 1 week because they didn't really tell you when it was going away because they said October 2023 and then it lasted for like 5 more months. And all of a sudden, our CPCs are shooting through the roof.
Let's do a hypothetical, okay? You are a Google exec that wants eCPC. And I'm a Google exec that wants to get rid of it and do it all manual. Hey, I know you built this great system. It's all included in there. It's already built. We use eCPC for search. It works great. It works great for shopping. I think we should get rid of it.
Why would you do that?
Well, I just think that we can just set a bid in shopping and we don't need, like, smart bidding is too much the rage. Maybe we go the opposite direction.
But maybe I want to spend more for certain products.
That's a good point. But you could also spend less, and we don't want less money.
Okay, deal.
But you already had it built. That's the thing is like,
yeah,
you actively worked to undo this thing and take it away where it is objectively a better bidding type. And you're out there saying smart bidding's the answer, smart bidding's the answer. And in reality, you've got this bid type that is like the DOJ. Everything in those trials talk about the advertiser will pay roughly the same amount as the bid. And then you are taking that smart bidding aspect of it away in order to force everybody into maximize conversion value, mm-hmm. into maximize conversion value with target ROAS. Like that you took away an option.
I did not realize how much I missed ECPC until it was
But
gone.
You took that option away.
Yeah.
And you put many, many, many human hours to get rid of that option. It worked.
What if they take it away for search? Akvila DeFazio shared from her at Akvila DeFazio account on X. Oh, look, another new column. She's talking about meta ads. And there, I guess this is a new column for actions, and it's giving her more points, like optimization score, I guess.
We should make a low point.
It's so stupid. Paul Bannister at P. Bannis on X shared, the new version of Safari will let users erase parts of web pages like ads that they don't like. This will have the greatest impact on sites with heavy repeat readership. Probably news sites hit worst of all. Sorry, journalism. Apple DGAF about you.
DGAF?
Yeah. You can figure it out.
DGAF?
I just want to say I'm excited about this for my oatmeal chocolate chip cookie recipe that I refuse to write down and go to the website every month.
That's the thing.
That I could just erase the top half.
You see all this messaging from Google and they're like, hey, you can't have intrusive interstitials. How does any website recipe rank? How does it rank?
They all do.
Every single one. It's a fight for your life to get to print this page.
Yeah.
And then you're going to print this page and like, I can actually see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Wild.
So, and then Eric_Sufert reshared it and said, of course, the Safari only feature won't apply to ads displayed in the news, stocks, or App Store apps. Interesting. And I think he has an image there from the Batman movie of bad guys.
One of the Joker ones.
Yeah. From Dario Zanoni on LinkedIn, he says he recently stumbled upon a new type of PMAX campaign that connects directly to marketplace systems and allows sellers to advertise only on their own products. So he found a Help Center article about this. All sales and product management occur in the marketplace itself, eliminating the need for owned and operated or merchant center accounts. That sounds really cool. But it's only available for select marketplaces, and we don't know what they are right now. They want you to reach out to them.
There was like one in Singapore that we could find.
Yeah. Hopefully there's more coming. That does sound cool. Anthony Higman found individual advertiser names in the Ad Transparency Center for Local Service Ads, and he says LSA Peoples. I believe this may be an important step in being able to more easily spot bad actors? I hope so, at least.
The title cases. I can't even
come on, Anthony. Why do you do this to me? Next up from at the PPC dude on X, he says Google is matching all products and services with competitor keywords. So, for example, if you have a small fitness or clothing brand that you target the phrase match keyword athletic polyester shirt, it could match with Adidas, Nike, Gymshark versus Alpha Elite or Noble shirt. Are those real brands? Those
Adidas,
sound like your
Nike,
your brands.
Gymshark, Noble, yes.
Noble.
Me and Sophie Logan, yeah.
Noble is a real like workout guy brand name.
Tom Brady. It's Tom Brady's brand now.
Oh, please.
You're not a Tom Brady guy?
No.
You
the
don't
cross
like Giselle?
I do like Giselle.
Oh.
She doesn't like him.
Okay.
Okay.
I just need to say this is a legend here. But also this should be the lawsuit. Once I'm done suing you, we should get a class action. How do you say that it is phrase match? Phrase is a specific term in the Webster-Merriam dictionary. So is exact. And to say athletic polyester shirt, if it does in fact show up for Nike shirt, this is what people should be like incensed about. That is not a phrase in those
That's
search
a bunch
terms.
Of bull, not no bull.
Yeah, a lot of bull. It's too much. Like, you're too greedy at this point. Just play the long game.
Yeah. They're going to change the names of the match types.
They need,
like, in 2024.
They need to do what they do for the lookalikes. That actually makes sense. You have narrow, you have balanced, and you have broad.
It's just going to be, like, sad. It's really over.
But the fact of those names, I don't know how there's not anybody at Google. And here, I know Googlers listen to the show because I get messages if I say something wrong, like, instantly. You should not say something as phrase match for legal reasons. And I'm not even a lawyer. You should not call it phrase match if it doesn't match that phrase. You should not call something exact match if it doesn't exactly match that phrase. I don't know how you've got away with this for so long, but that is an insane way to label your product. And yeah. You should be worried about that specifically, because that is the issue. Athletic polyester shirt should not match no bull shirt. Mm-hmm. There's not a phrase.
I feel like they just know when they officially rebrand them, we're all going to be talking about it, but we are anyway. Just do it.
But from a legal standpoint, yeah. There's nothing that has that phrase in there. And there's nothing that matches. I mean, there are some exact matches, but the majority of your spend is not on exact match.
Juan, the PPC dude, he's got tips for how to fix this. So make sure you follow him at the PPC dude on X. Anthony Higman says he just got an advanced verification email for a Google local service ad. So if you're an LSA person, make sure you check your inbox for that. But it looks like he needs to complete it by May 13th. Dario Zanoni found an update in Meta Ads involving the ads catalog item enhancements. He says in many accounts, Meta now permits just toggling the ad catalog items enhancement on and off, where they used to be able to like subdivide from there. So it could be a different account within your Meta Ads, like parent account, and you have the wrong catalog, and there's nothing you can do about it but just submit a frowny face. So good luck, everyone.
It would be my favorite documentary if somebody like tracked where all the feedback goes and they had like access to Google. And it's like, here is what people are thinking about the March 2024 core update. And it shows this like email that's like, inbox, never, none of the messages have been opened. It's like, where did these frownies go? And it's like, well, nobody knows where they went.
Dario's optimistic that it's just a test, but I hope he's right. And we have some resources for DTC people who need more information on what is happening with Temu. There is an awesome article from Adweek called Temu's Advertising Avalanche is Impossible to Ignore, with a quote from Mike Ryan, who also has an episode of the Growing E-Commerce podcast called Behind Temu's Digital Advertising Landslide that you should definitely check out. And speaking of Mike Ryan and DTC, he shared this week a new chart. Greg would love it. It says AliExpress is increasing their Google investment here in Europe with activity levels higher than Black Friday, Cyber Monday 23, and some small but interesting localization efforts. Very low visibility compared to Temu. So there's a lot going on this week. We don't even have time to talk about what's going on with DTC, but it's a lot. Thomas Hassell asked this week, has anyone else seen these new submenus when entering a conversion goal? They're not clickable, he says, but then I saw other people saying they were, but he could click through for details, settings, diagnostics, store diagnostics, and web pages when setting up a conversion action. People were liking it, I think. So at least we got something good. Is there any more paid news?
Yeah, let me add three more for you. Okay. That is a lot this week. All right, shop over in organic. We've got a lot as well. First up from Glenn Gabe. Google is changing the search generative experience response to read as, quote, AI answer. And before it said generative AI is experimental, they kind of took that off and they changed it to say answer instead of observation. I believe it was like observational. I think it's kind of weird because it's like you don't really answer stuff all the time with it, especially knowing it like won't get into like reviews and all that stuff, but it's called an AI answer. And there's a learn more if you want all those disclaimers now. From Aleda Solis, and she went through the Google Q1 earnings call, a couple of interesting notes about SGE and AI. She found Sundar Pichai to say, we're starting to bring AI overviews to the main search results page, focusing on areas where Gen AI can improve the search experience while also prioritizing traffic to websites and merchants. Based on our testing, we're encouraged that we're seeing an increase in search usage among people who use the new AI overviews, as well as increased user satisfaction with the results. Your thoughts on satisfaction with SGE?
I don't like it. I've tried it like twice and didn't like it and stopped using it.
I know I talked about it last time. I know I just talked about it on the It's New show over on Search Engine Roundtable YouTube. I don't understand who would use that over Perplexity. Perplexity gives you links to like actual sources where this thing just spits out information that's like, some people like this aspect of it, others say this. And it's like, well, who are the other people? I want to know where it's at. Just help me out, please. And then one other note from that call is that the machine costs associated with the SGE responses have decreased 80% from when first introduced. So remember, that was sort of like something where it took a lot of effort and money in order to produce it, down 80%, which, you know, we use math. That's a big percentage. All right, from Glenn Gabe and Google Search Central on X, they said there's a reminder that the last part of the March 2024 announcements, the new Google search spam policies about reputation abuse, take effect after May 5th. Before, they said it started on May 5th, but Glenn says take effect after May 5th. I wonder how long after. And this is really like if you're Forbes or something that's supposed to be about business and money, and you are out there having like, what are the best creatine gummies? Right? Like that's a site, reputation abuse. Okay, from Barry Schwartz over on Search Engine Roundtable, Google has renamed the product site search filter to product websites. We went off on this about 4 weeks ago. There's all, there's images, there's product, and then they had it just say sites, which is weird, and now it says product websites, so I guess that's better. From Bree E. Anderson on X, she says, project manager and account execs, friends, Looker Studio just released an update for you. You can now create Gantt charts. So you make Gantt charts.
Wow.
In Looker Studio.
Can't get enough.
Great one. Okay. And
I'm trying to help you.
Narcs can rejoice because Danny Sullivan, Google search liaison, said the search company will add the upcoming site reputation abuse policy to the spam reporting tool. It is not live yet. I believe Aaron over at Edge of the Web tried to already submit some stuff. But after May 5th, the report spam form will have a new option to report site reputation abuse. Wow. So if you're somebody out there with all the coupons and all the stuff, but it has nothing to do with your business, you can get reported.
DTC Twitter is going to go after Temu.
Yeah. All right. And in AI and news, first up from Glenn Gabe and the New York Times, there's another lawsuit for OpenAI and Microsoft. 8 daily newspapers are suing OpenAI and Microsoft over the usage of AI. This is New York Daily News, Chicago Tribune, Orlando Sentinel, a whole bunch of other. They're all from either Media News Group or Tribune Publishing. They're subsidiaries of Alden, the country's second largest newspaper. And according to the complaint, OpenAI and Microsoft are using these copyrighted articles without permission to train and feed their generative AI products, including ChatGPT and Copilot. And one thing I thought made sense in this lawsuit was that the complaint argues that the chatbots, I don't know why I call them chatbots. The complaint argued that the chatbots regularly surface the entire text of articles behind subscription paywalls for users and often did not prominently link back to the source. Like if you're taking something paywalled and bringing it out and they can prove that, I feel like you should lose that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Okay, in more AI and news, there is on the flip side of the coin a new arrangement because Google has agreed to pay Wall Street Journal owner News Corp $5 million to $6 million annually to develop new AI-related content and products as part of the Google News Initiative. According to the article, one big concern for publishers is that tech firms offers on AI licensing put little value on news content. And apparently they are talking about help. Google is, again, paying them to help surface that content. But like, why are you just paying Wall Street Journal? Shouldn't you have to pay everybody?
Yeah.
And then you're like making tools. You're not making tools because you're a nice corporation, right? You're making tools to figure out how to like generate news yourself or something. Like whatever this $5 to $6 million like in 2024 is going to put the Wall Street Journal out of business. Don't you think?
I
like who's like, hey, can I make tools for you? I'd be like, sure. Oh, you know what? I'm also going to give you $6 million.
Why wouldn't the Wall Street Journal be smarter?
I mean, they're getting $6 million. I'm sure that probably like that.
Yeah.
Okay, then there is another publisher deal. The Financial Times has signed a deal with OpenAI to train AI models on its archived content and let ChatGPT respond with short summaries of the articles. So apparently, I'm assuming there's probably money going to the Financial Times because of getting its content. So some people are mad and suing. Other people are getting money, like the Wall Street Journal and then Financial Times.
I have never thought to use ChatGPT for that.
For news? For like little articles?
Oh my gosh. My lightning round next week is going to be very different.
Okay. There you go. We'll have some auto-generated, not fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. And we're just going to – I know we alluded to this earlier, but we're just going to do – checking in on Google search. From Barry Schwartz over on Search Engine Roundtable. If you Google a flag GIF and then click on the waving refinement, you are taken to a page full of Nazi flags.
Oh, lovely.
I just need to make a statement that I am not a big historian, like a big historic buff. But like one thing I learned to know, Nazis are very bad. The worst.
That
and if
is
you type
not
in
good.
Flag GIF and look for a waving GIF, you get an entire page of Nazi flags.
Have we checked since Barry's got some power? So has
I mean,
he gotten rid of it yet?
I look at the GIF. The GIF is all Nazi flags.
Oh my gosh, it's still there. What the heck?
And the thing that drives me crazy is like when I was trying to make one image and I was like, I went to Bard, now Gemini, and I'm like, hey, can you make an image of Taylor Swift making heart hands saying, I love you, Shep, or something? It's like, you cannot talk about Taylor Swift. And it's like, okay, well, can you make a singer that resembles Taylor Swift a picture? It's like, you cannot talk about Taylor Swift. You can't do anything with Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Maybe do that with Nazis.
I know. Yeah, they should get equal treatment.
Nazis
well,
should
be opposite.
Taylor Swift
yeah.
treatment.
Well, the opposite. They Taylor's be, like protected. Yeah.
They should get.
They should be banned.
They should be banned just like Taylor Swift.
Well,
I agree, Shep.
Barry posted this morning. It's inacceptable. It's 3:46 p.m. and it's still up. But hopefully by the time the episode is live, it's gone. We'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, checking out on Google search.
It's great.
Not good. Nicole, what's happening in social?
All right. First up in social, Elon Musk announced last month that there will be a new UI for the app where reply, like, and reshare buttons are hidden on posts in feed. And now X released a video preview of how users will engage with this new system. So in the preview video, it looks like you don't see any of the like, reshare, reply, but if you tap and hold a post, it'll bring up the action buttons and you'll be able to also swipe and to reply or like a post.
Why?
So
Nicole, why?
I feel like you're just asking for less engagement in general on the app because it's not in front of people's faces.
Also, you're gonna hide all the detail?
Yeah, so it'll say how when it was posted and how many impressions, I think.
I hate that. I don't understand.
Everything else is hidden to interact with the actual post.
It's still to this day, the YouTube thing where they got rid of dislikes drives me absolutely crazy. I'm trying to get my kids to get their elbows in on their swing. And I was looking for baseball videos and you have no idea what is good or bad. And then the fact that you're going to look at these tweets, one might be really long and you can't see how many times somebody favorited it or liked it or hearted it or whatever they did to it. And you don't get to see those metrics. Mm-hmm. I hate that. I want to know if people are giving this credit. Now you have to do an extra click or swipe or whatever to do it. I don't want to do that much work. I just want to look, scroll and see what's good.
Yeah.
Why did you even buy Twitter, Elon?
In other news, Yelp has released an AI-powered chatbot to help consumers connect with relevant businesses for their tasks. So it'll be on the iOS app under a projects tab, and they'll also release it to Android later this year. And then Glenn Gabe also covered this on X, saying that the Yelp Fusion API is also launching. And I don't know, I just never really thought of Yelp as
cutting edge.
Yeah, that.
I'm just happy they're around, to be honest. It was news to me.
Yeah, I just use them for restaurants, but I guess I know they do have business reviews for like plumbing or if you needed.
Oh, I think of them as business reviews.
Really?
Yeah.
You use Yelp?
No, but when I'm looking for like a restaurant or something, I feel like it's always a review result.
Yeah, for restaurants. But like if you – they call it projects. And so that's more for people using Yelp to like find a new plumber or electrician. Yeah.
It's like Angie's List.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Or Angie's now.
Yeah. Like why did they do that?
They divorced.
It's really weird.
Real messy breakup.
Finally, Instagram has updated its feed algorithm, which will prioritize original content posters and give smaller accounts more opportunity. So with this update, they're removing aggregator accounts from recommendations. So accounts that repeatedly post content from other Instagram users, to clarify, 10 or more times in the last 30 days, will not be shown in surfaces where we recommend content. They're also adding labels to reposted content to direct users towards the original content creator. They're replacing reposts with original content and recommendations.
So like rip meme accounts? Is that what we're...
That's what I originally thought. Like I don't think there's any use case I've seen where you're not crediting the original user.
Yeah. Or I love when people find like a really good tweet and share it on an Instagram meme account.
I know. That's how I consume X posts.
Yeah.
Is on Instagram.
Interesting.
Yeah. And finally, smaller creators will get more distribution.
And that brings us to our real life segment. Straight out of our accounts and into your ear holes. It's time for Working Hard or Hardly Working, where we talk about what's going on in our IRL work. Good, bad, or otherwise.
For me this week, I shouted out a new card I found in the overview tab last week that sorted performance by campaign label, which I thought was really cool. And I found a couple new ones this week. I didn't see this one before for search ads, and it showed my top performing search ads in a search campaign, which was an RSA. So I'm taking this to mean this is how it's displaying, like with these headlines and descriptions, which is like better reporting than you get in the art. That's cool. And then biggest changes to your campaigns and ad groups. I don't know if I just avoided the overview tab before and now it's like surfacing more, but that was a new one to me and I thought that was cool. And then billing. I think it's nice to know when your next payment is and then your balance as of whenever you're in the account. So don't sleep on it. There's also a bunch of recommendations peppered in, but I thought those were cool. What about you, Nicole?
All right. This week for me, working hard is Jack, our head of data here at Cypress North. We've been working with one particular client on getting them up to compliance for GDPR and cookie banners. And all of that stuff is very complex to explain, especially if you're passing the information on to our direct report at the client, but also like they're passing it on to their supervisors and the C-suite. And he's done a great job of making sure they're in the know and explaining anything they have questions on.
And just a note on that too, you now officially have less than 2 months to save your GA3 data. Go download it. If you need help, we can take it, audit all the information, make sure it's correct, and get it to you in an easily digestible, like consumable, similar to a GA where you can choose dates over at uadataextract.com. But just a reminder on that side, I remembered, we're under 2 months left before all of your historical information is deleted. If you need help, reach out. And for me, one of the biggest things is a lot of times you get really stuck in some of the details. And we had a client that has 90%, 90 to 95% of their revenue that comes in via desktop. It's B2B e-commerce. And we had mobile ads running, and we're kind of running them during the day because there's a lot of overlap to B2C. Shop is like, what if we test going all hours? It's still TROAS. Let's give it a shot. And it worked. And I think that's something that sometimes everybody's looking for, like a magic bullet, this or that. Coming up with experiments, even if they fail, will help you move forward. Like it can confirm if something doesn't work, or it can show that there's promise. And I think that is our job as digital advertisers, is to say, let's push ourselves, let's try different things, see what works, cut the stuff that doesn't. And the only way to do that is to experiment, and it actually worked. So great job, Shep.
Thanks.
And now for this week's
Cool Tool.
As a reminder, our Cool Tool segment is not an official endorsement or paid mention. We're simply sharing something we found in our travels that may be of use to our listeners. and is really, really cool.
This week's cool tool is brought to you by Motion. Take your ad account organization to a new dimension by standardizing your ad naming conventions using Motion's naming generator template. So in this template, you just make a copy of their spreadsheet and you're able to define with pick list values of information that describes your campaign, ad group, or ad, such as the funnel position you're targeting, ad type, your call to action you're using in your ads. And then it pulls in through a drop-down list where you can adjust your inputs to the specific campaign that you're trying to name. Then the spreadsheet generates your campaign name or ad group name, and you can paste it right into your account. So as always, we'll have this link in our newsletter as well as on Discord, newsletter.andcommunity.marketingo'clock.com respectively. So pick your poison and check it out.
Now it's time for our must-read marketing article of the week. An article so advanced, so in-depth, so detailed that we simply cannot cover it in its entirety on today's show.
This week's must-read marketing article of the week comes from a man we've heard a lot from today, Glenn Gabe over on G Squared Interactive.
He's busy.
GSQI. I'm just happy that he survived this March update.
I know.
Some of those tweets at the end, when he's talking about jumping off his balcony.
And like, little did he know it was already over, you know?
Yeah, the whole time. What were you even doing, Glenn? But he has a blog post out called The March 2024 Google Core Update and How the Transition of Google's Helpful Content Update System to its Core Ranking System is Supposed to Work. He breaks everything down, looks at a lot of the folks that got hit by September that didn't recover, and has fantastic analysis. If you are looking for a great recap on this update, he's got it. I'm just going to read a little snippet here of what he talked about. How the HCU transition was supposed to go versus how it went. Every morning during the March core update, I ran the visibility numbers for 380 sites impacted heavily by the September HCU. I was hoping that we'd see movement across those sites as Google's core systems took over assessing the helpfulness of the content. And no, I did not believe all would recover. Some definitely shouldn't recover, but I did think that I would see some recovery for certain sites that have been working to improve. And maybe some would drop if they didn't. I did not expect to see what actually happened. Every morning, I saw nothing but more drops across those sites. It was insane to analyze, and I feel terrible for site owners impacted heavily by the September helpful content update. I truly believe at some point during the update, the old classifier will be dropped, and Google systems for assessing the helpfulness would take over. Nope. And he goes on to talk about the fact that you should actually fill out the forms. Somebody came to him that was losing between $600,000 and $800,000 in like a 6 to 8 week period. And they filled out the form, explained everything, and that got fixed. So I just think this is a great article. It's got some positivity in there. And I feel like a lot of people just need a little bit of positivity. Glenn's got it here, albeit anybody that got hit by September seems to be aft, at least from this current March update. Maybe down the road that will change. Either way, head on over to gsqi.com to get all of Glenn's first-class, world-leading expertise and analysis on the March core update. Thank you, Glenn.
And now on to our playlist of curated songs to work to. You can head over to playlist.marketingo'clock.com. You guys, this is a big month. I have an almost one-year-old. She's getting close to talking. I really think her first words are going to be, "Were you sent by someone who wanted me dead?" So needless to say, my song
is... talking about death as her first word, Shep?
Did you sleep with a gun underneath our bed? So the song is "The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived."
By who?
Taylor Allison Swift.
I mean,
that performed by the smallest woman who ever lived, Violet Zernheld.
It sounds like... maybe she's not a good influence on a child talking about that first word to be about guns.
It's such a good song. You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Okay.
Have you listened to the album?
I listened to the song by Post Malone, with Post Malone.
The album's so long.
There's a lot about killing in it.
I've got to say, she's just being dramatic. It's fun.
Why are you talking about
it's
killing?
Fun.
Writing music for kids.
It's not for kids. It's for me. Oh. It's fun.
Wait, it's not for kids. All my girls' soccer team loves it.
Well, they can enjoy it, but she's a person writing a song for herself. Okay.
Does she swear on the album?
A lot. Mm-hmm.
Do they beep it out?
I can send you the clean version okay. if you'd like.
No, my kids will not listen to Taylor Swift. They scream. I'm like, sometimes I'll record a reaction. Like, hey, do you guys want to listen to Taylor Swift?
They just put up with it for their teammates?
We stopped doing that. We're going to once again outdoors. We don't have time indoors.
This isn't a sporty album.
Okay.
So what will your song be?
It'll be Burned by Josiah and the Bonnevilles.
And I will be adding Master of None by Beach House.
All right. That does it for today's show.
It is officially now not Marketing Clock.
Thanks for listening.
We miss you already.
We can't wait to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Marketing O'Clock. If you're looking for more information on today's topic, head over to marketingoclock.com/newsletter to receive every single article we covered. We share the news as it breaks in our Discord community. Head over to community.marketingoclock.com to join.
Welcome to this week's Shootin' the Heck. We're after our famous Friday news show. We don't talk about marketing anymore. We just...
Shoot the Heck.
And we are back at it with everyone's favorite game. Greg, what game is that?
We're playing literally everybody's favorite game. I know you two love it. It's called Travel Buddies.
Okay.
You get to pick from a choice of two people. There is a right answer. There is a wrong answer. And you're going to choose which type of person you are going to go on a global excursion with. All right? So you're going to have to travel a globe with this person. So work together as a team, see if you can figure out the right answer or the wrong answer. You guys have historically been pretty good at this. So let's see. What's your record in this one?
Maybe 0%.
Okay.
If I peek at your screen while I see the correct answer.
Yeah, you sure will, but don't peek at the screen. Okay, first up, you are going on a trip with somebody that worships Elon Musk or somebody that worships Joe Rogan.
I don't want anyone that worships anyone.
You have to go on a trip with this person, and you have to make a choice.
I don't know a lot about Joe Rogan.
I don't either, but I know that Elon Musk is a little obnoxious. So I would say Joe Rogan, because that person who enjoys Joe Rogan is probably, I don't know.
I really don't know. I would say Elon Musk is, like, smarter, right?
You also have tables you can pull into this if
you
want.
Yeah, tapes. Do you listen to Joe Rogan?
I do. I'm going to take Joe Rogan just because I listen to his podcast. I think it's good.
Is this your final answer?
I have no opinion. Yeah, sure.
Joe Rogan.
Okay, incorrect. The positives going with Joe Rogan is you might be able to talk a lot about like conspiracies and things like that. But the person that likes Elon Musk probably started liking them due to the fact that he shoots rockets into space. You could talk about space. And then the fact that he basically championed the electric car. And so you could be talking about like good carbon things and all that. It's going to be a little annoying on like the self-driving features and the Cybertruck and all that. But it's better than being like talking MMA and getting in having to wait all the time for them to get out of a cold bath for like the Joe Rogan person.
Mixed martial arts?
Correct.
Well, Tapes takes cold baths, I think. That's probably why I picked it. He told me he's got a little tub in his backyard, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, and well, I'm surprised we got that wrong.
Trying to get that through customs because Taves is going to have to take that with him on the trip because he can't go a day without his cold bath and his his Shroom Tech or Nutrimind or whatever it's called. Shroom Mind? What's it called?
I don't know. Arctic something?
It's like on it something or other.
Alpha Brain.
Alpha Brain. They're going to be popping Alpha Brain the whole time. Okay. You are going to go on a trip with somebody whose favorite game is Trouble? Or somebody whose favorite game is the Game of Life.
Oh, man.
Those are both great games.
I used to eat a lot of those little life people back in the day.
That explains
it. You just chew on them. Plastic. Delicious.
Do you actually swallow them?
No. Oh. Just crack it in half. It's really yummy. I'm anemic. I feel like life is better than Trouble. But I always used to cheat the Game of Life and like try to control my life.
I would say Life because you're making decisions throughout the game. And I want someone who can make decisions on this trip. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Trouble and you're like traveling in a car, aren't you, in life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, tables.
Well, I'm already outnumbered, but I'm a Trouble person. It's like my favorite board game.
Here comes Trouble. Going with that. I'm going Life.
Okay. Let me just check and see what the correct answer is for that. The correct answer is Trouble.
What?
Unfortunately, it's Trouble because the person who loves Game of Life they're going to overanalyze every single decision. And that's the actual problem. Someone that's playing Trouble is just like, let's go. Let's pop that thing. Let's go. Try to pass him. We're ready to go. Oh, you want to go get tapas? Oh, cool. Let's go. You want to go to Waterfall? Let's go. Person game of life is like, well, we have a path that one ends in a waterfall and one ends in horseback riding. And it's going to be overanalyzed.
You don't want to travel with Trouble. That sounds like a terrible idea.
You're not actually bringing the game along.
You don't want Trouble on the road.
Isn't that a Taylor Swift song?
Yes.
Of course it is. Okay. You're 0 for 2. You have plenty of time to come back and win this thing.
Okay.
Somebody whose favorite cereal is Grape Nuts.
What?
Or never somebody heard of that. Whose favorite cereal is Wheaties.
These are...
But it's Grape Nuts. I've never seen the cereal before.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Grape Nuts?
Never even heard of Grape Nuts.
It's actually, it says it's power packed nutrition, so I guess that would be good for like long days. Mm-hmm. But you gotta fiber. Go Wheaties.
Who, your final answer?
Who would identify as a Grape Nuts aficionado? Like that is not
one of the people that is gonna go on this trip with you.
No.
Okay, the correct answer is actually Grape Nuts.
You're kidding.
Because Wheaties don't have a taste to them. It tastes like cardboard. Yes, Grape Nuts also has great fiber, so they're going to be nice and regular. They're not going to get bound up on the trip. And Wheaties doesn't taste like anything. At least this person could be like, yeah, I want this like pebbly garbage in my mouth, but there's a hint of grape to it. So you might be able to go and adventure and explore more highly tasty cuisine.
Grape-flavored things are like the worst artificial flavor. That, no.
Okay, you're going to go on a trip. Favorite restaurant? First person, Arby's.
Ooh.
Second person, Popeyes.
Popeyes is better.
I don't think I've been to either.
Popeyes chicken is better. You put it in the fridge overnight.
I trust
They should use that as a slogan.
It's really greasy.
You think you like this? Put it in the fridge overnight.
It's really greasy the day of, but overnight it like absorbs into the chicken. It's really good.
Okay.
Tapes, do you have an opinion?
I don't know. I was going to say Popeyes, and that might have just swayed my opinion. Yeah, I'm still going Popeyes.
Yeah.
Arby's is gross. Don't they use like gelatin for their meat or something? And then it like turns into like fake meat?
Allegedly.
It has an identity like Louisiana cuisine is respected all over the world. Where Arby's is just like bad American
all
food.
All over the world.
New Orleans is a cultural destination.
Okay, is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Popeyes is good.
Okay. Let me check the correct answer. The correct answer is Arby's.
You're kidding.
Popeyes makes amazing chicken. But what can you get at Popeyes? Just chicken. You're going to all these different countries and you want people that can eat a selection of roast beef and ham and their cordon bleu and whatever.
They have ham
else.
At Arby's?
I think they do. They got the meats. You want people that are like ready to try different. And if you can survive Arby's like that, you are going to thrive.
Popeyes has spicy food. Arby's does not.
I'm sorry. The facts are the facts. Do you want one more?
That was not the right answer.
It is because you have a bigger palate. They're not just a fan of good chicken. They can eat bad meat.
Bland American food. Okay.
Okay. Do you want one more?
Yeah, maybe no. I got to get one.
0 for 4. Let's finish without 1 and 4. Okay. Somebody that collects troll dolls or somebody that collects Beanie Babies?
I'm going to say Beanie Babies. There's something about fake plastic toys that grosses me out.
Troll dolls are probably lighter in the carry-on.
Yeah, remember, they're not taking them. It's just this is the person you're stuck on this trip with.
What do you think is gross about the troll dolls?
Aren't they like plastic with the hair sticking out? I don't like plastic stuff.
You can clean it easier with a wipe. Beanie Babies, like, absorb.
Can you put it through the washing machine, the Beanie Babies?
I don't know. I like to think a Beanie Baby collectible from the 90s is worth more today than a troll doll. So that could be, like, some extra spending money on your trip.
Just so you know, no Beanie Baby is worth anything, for the record.
That's not what
I
believe.
There's, like, a Princess Diana one that's all fake, and it might be worth, like, 60 grand.
What about my collectible holiday Barbies in box?
Those are actually worth more than Beanie Babies.
I have
a
lot. They're worth like face value.
Still more than Beanie Babies.
I think troll dolls could be like offensive to some like cultures over the sea.
You're not taking it overseas. Okay. Tabes, what do you have any input? Are you good?
I feel like they're like the same person, but I'm going to go with Beanie Babies just because, you know, I grew up in that era when they were huge and I think they're cool. Or I thought they were cool.
Troll dolls would be cute at like the nude beaches.
Okay, so the correct answer is actually troll dolls.
Oh.
You're 0 for 5, unfortunately.
Well, I kind of said that.
Yeah, I mean, troll dolls, they're like kind of like a doll, which is a more advanced, like, A, something's wrong with you if you've got either one of them, right? Let's put that out there. If you're collecting little stuffed animals, you've got issues. And if you're collecting dolls, you've got issues. You've got issues. But one of them is at least like a humanoid thing, and it's kind of funny. The other one is just a doll. Or just a stuffed animal. Like, one, you can have, like, different colors. You could set it up, whatever. So you're close to it. Beanie Baby's incorrect answer.
Okay. Well, I guess we should all burn our collectibles, according to Greg.
No.
You said just they're not worth anything.
Just normal things. Yeah.
And we'll see you next week. You know what time it is. It's officially marketing o'clock. Settle in, sit back, keep it on.